When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
I feel like looks best on my resume is I've been very fortunate. I've got to meet and befriend and often work with many of my heroes. You know, I'm in a band with Stuart Copeland, for Christ's sakes, and he's one of my best friends now. I mean, that's mind-boggling.
That's Les Claypool, best known as the co-founder of the rock band Primus, talking about his many musical collaborations. Les talks about his musical influences and the return of his fearless Flying Frog Brigade on this episode of Behind the Setlist.
Welcome to Behind the Setlist, the podcast where artists tell the stories about the songs they perform live. I'm Jay Gilbert from Label Logic.
And I'm Glenn Peoples from Billboard. In this episode, we talked to Les Claypool. Jay, the last time I saw Les on stage was a Primus show at Bonnaroo, I think in 2016. The band was in fine form. They sounded amazing, and they're incredible musicians. And there's nobody like Les Claypool. When you hear Les Claypool in song, you know it's him. He's that unique.
He sure is.
And one thing I love about him is it's good to see that people still love oddball and funny music. Primus and all of Les's projects have a sense of humor, and he's just a weirdo. Yeah. And I mean that in the best possible sense.
Yeah.
And before we started recording, you and I were talking about what other weird bands are out there that are popular, because Les has been able to prove that people have a sense of humor and they like weird music mm-hmm. for decades. And then, you know, we came up with a pretty small list, I think.
Yeah. Yeah, maybe Frank Zappa and a few others where there are quality musicians, but that fun, that weirdness, you know, Les is an incredible musician, like you said. He's best known for co-founding the band Primus, of course, but he's been involved in a lot of side projects. Oysterhead, that's a collaboration with Trey Anastasio from Phish and Stuart Copeland of The Police. The Claypool Lennon Delirium with Sean Lennon, John Lennon's son. Colonel Claypool's Bucket of Bernie Brains with Bernie Morelli and Buckethead, and the band he's currently touring with, Colonel Claypool's Fearless Flying Frog Brigade.
The Frog Brigade is on tour for the first time since 2003, and that extends through July 15th, and then the band picks it up again in Riverside, California in October, and it ends up in Nashville at the beautiful Ryman Auditorium on October 31st.
The band is playing Pink Floyd's album Animals in its entirety in the sets. Les talks about that during the interview. So without further ado, here's Les Claypool behind the set list. Let it roll.
Let's kick it off. And, you know, you're touring with the Fearless Frog Brigade right now. Tell us how that band first came together a couple of years ago.
The Fearless Flying Frog Brigade. Actually, it didn't come together a couple years ago. It came together like 20 some odd years ago.
I thought I said decades. Did I not say decades? Damn.
I thought you said days, but my, you know, these connections kind of are a little glitchy. So basically, after I did the Oysterhead thing, all of a sudden I was in demand as one of these guys that could wrangle musicians together for these jam events. And I was asked by Michael Bailey, who used to run the Mountain Air Festival, which was the big BGP event back in the day, to put together something for his event. So I got I hadn't played with Tim Alexander in a long while because he had left Primus, and my buddy Jack Irons. So I had two drummers, Herb and Jack Irons. And then I got my buddy Merv on guitar and Skerrick on sax, and I was going to call it the Thunder Brigade because we had two drummers. And Michael Bailey was like, you know, it's already a little odd that to the jam scene that, you know, the Primus guy is going to come in here and Thunder Brigade might just be a little too heavy-handed. So because it was in Calaveras County, I thought of, well, the Jumping Frog of Calaveras County, you know, a la Mark Twain, and it became the Frog Brigade. So that's how it all started.
You know, your style of playing is so identifiable. The moment you hear, you know exactly that that's Les Claypool playing. And I had read that...
And you switched the channel.
No.
Man, that was the biggest delay in the reaction.
Well, when you said switch the channel,
timing.
When you said switch the channel, I'm thinking my recorder here, like the channel just switched, and you, and I was like panicking, and then I went, oh, okay, he's crack.
Don't you remember the days of actually switching the channel? I mean, you know, yes. I think we're all in the era where we can remember when televisions used to actually go clunk, yes. clunk, clunk,
yes.
switch them.
Yeah, I grew up in that era where it was a manual. You had to get up off the couch, walk over. I think there were only three stations right then, and then something called UHF, which nobody really understood what that was. But
but I loved UHF because I could watch my creature feature movies.
Ah, there you go. Mine didn't have anything, unfortunately. So... I read that you were influenced growing up by Larry Graham from Sly and the Family Stone, which makes a lot of sense, and also Stanley Clark. Talk about, you know, growing up, learning to play the instrument, developing your style. What kind of records were you listening to? What were you playing in those days?
Well, I really had no money. So my record collection kind of sucked. And I joined one of those RCA clubs where you could get six albums for a penny and then send you some horrible album once a month. And if you didn't send it back in time, you owed them money for it. So I didn't have a lot of records. But, you know, when I started off, it was guys like Geddy Lee and Chris Squire and John Paul Jones. And I worshipped Geddy. And there was nobody greater. And my first concert was Rush, Hemispheres. Wow. And then I had a buddy who had so many records, he literally, his walls and his ceiling were wallpapered with the album covers. And we'd just go to his house and sit around and listen to records. And so he said, you know, Les, you keep talking about Geddy and Geddy's great, blah, 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 but you need to listen to some Larry Graham. So I was like, all right. So he played me some Larry Graham and some Stanley Clark. And I had seen Louis Johnson on Don Kirshner's rock concert. So I was already going, holy shit, I need to do some of that thumping and plucking. You know, a lot of these, you know, nowadays they say slap bass, and that's not what it is. You know, Larry Graham, I saw Larry Graham play, and he talks all about thumping and plucking. It was thumping and plucking. Slap bass is what the guys do on the upright, which I can't even do. A buddy of mine, he's a ripping slap player on the upright, and you're literally slapping the bass and popping it, and that's slap bass. But for some reason, it's been bastardized. But Larry Graham is the guy who should get the credit for this. And he always called it the thumping and the plucking. And when we were learning it, that's what we called it, thumping. We'd say, oh, I'm thumping right now. So,
you know, one of the things I've always loved about your music and whichever of the 48 projects you're working on is there's this psychedelic absurdist quality to it. And where did that aspect of your music come from?
I do have to say, I'm enjoying that you're talking into a giant juju bee. That's what it looks like from my computer. the psychedelic, I'm sorry, I was so obsessed with the jujube. What was the question again?
The absurdist, comical, far out nature of your music.
I mean, you know, both Larry and I have always been huge fans of British comedy. You know, whenever we'd tour Europe, when we'd go to London, the first thing we would do is go to Tower Records and buy up everything that had Adrian Edmondson and Rick Mayall on it, all the Midnight comic strips, all the Young Ones, all the Black Adders, you know, Bottoms, all that stuff. And so, you know, and the way my family has always been, especially starting with my grandfather, there was a lot of addiction and stuff in my family and alcoholism. And the way we always dealt with things was with humor. So it's always been a big part of my life. And also just the notion that, you know, with Primus, we all, you know, I always knew that we could wiggle our fingers pretty well. You know, we could do these things technically that, you know, weren't necessarily considered cool in the punk world. There was a lot of the sort of self-deprecating element to Primus, hence the whole Primus sucks thing. So, I don't know. I've always been attracted to that sort of element. I never really considered myself a singer back in the day because I couldn't. My dad would literally tell me, he's like, you know, you can't sing for shit, but you can sure play that bass. So I always felt I was the narrator. I always, you know, I remember when I met Chuck D, he was like, man, you sound like Mr. Magoo and shit. And I thought that was the greatest compliment. And I've been called like the Mel Blanc of rock back in the day. I'm doing more singing now as I got more confident in my voice doing Frog Brigade and whatnot. But in the early days, it was all about just going into some sort of character and growing up listening to a lot of country music and stuff where there was always these fables and these stories within the songs. I've always been attracted to that. So I don't know. I don't know if I answered your question. I kind of danced around it a bit, but that's sort of where the storytelling element and the humorous element, as far as psychedelic, we used to just smoke a lot of weed and, you know, take hallucinogens for our New Year's shows. So,
yeah.
I think it was, you know, we have a record called Frizzle Fry, for Christ's sake, you know, so
yeah,
it's just sort of seeped into that. And then also doing the stuff with Sean, you know, Sean Lennon, that's our whole trip is very psychedelic. Yeah. So
talk about your equipment just for a moment. I noticed you use a piccolo bass and you have your, you know, these Carl Thompson basses. Talk about why you use those instruments and what is a piccolo bass and why would you use like your six string fretless? Talk a little bit about your equipment.
Well, I stumbled across the Carl Thompson many years ago. I had a, you know, the bass of my dreams was always a Rickenbacker 4001, you know, that's what Getty played. That's what Chris Squire played. And then when I finally had some money to go buy one, I got talked into getting an Ibanez Musician EQ by the guy at the store. Cause he's like, oh no, you can't thump on those. And I was like, oh shit. So I got this Ibanez Musician EQ, but then I went back and hung out at the store one day and I stumbled across this Carl Thompson. And I remember Stanley Clark on I Want to Play for You. He had this picture of all his basses laid out and he had a handful of Carl Thompsons. And this was a piccolo bass. It just happened to be a piccolo bass, which meant it was shorter scale and lots of frets. Mm. And I bought this thing. I begged and borrowed and pleaded and borrowed, you know, got money from various people, including my mother, and went and bought this thing. And I just, that was just my bass forever, you know, it looked like a hunk of driftwood and people either loved the look of it or hated the look of it, but it was definitely a very unique instrument. But I have since retired that instrument from the road just because A, it's a very precious thing to me, but B, I also designed my own instrument, which is more of a cross between various instruments, including Carl Thompson's, but I wanted something that fit me, especially as I'm getting older and, you know, I want the ergo thing. And my basses, they're these pachyderm basses. They're like Ferraris. They're very player friendly and very ergonomic. So that's what I'm using now as far as the six string. And I have a Carl Thompson six string fretless that I've used for many years. And I only really use it in the studio now because it's such a precious instrument. I don't want to take it out on the road and subject it to all the harshness and the vulnerability of it being on the road. So now I have a pachyderm six string fretless that I use, but they're instruments that are tailored for me.
Got it.
You know, something you said earlier, Les, that stood out because I've wanted to ask you about your collaborations is that you had got this reputation as a person who could wrangle other musicians. And so what is it about Les Claypool that makes you such a popular collaborator? There's a musicianship, people want to play with you, and then there must be.
It's obviously my sex appeal and my incredible wit. You know, that's really what it boils down to.
People like working with you. Is it the sex appeal and the humor?
Yeah, yeah. No, you know, I mean, to be serious, I don't know what it is. And that's, to me, that's been the greatest thing about my career. And that's what I'm most proud of. And that's what I feel like looks best on my resume is I've been very fortunate. I've got to meet and befriend and often work with many of my heroes. You know, I'm in a band with Stuart Copeland, for Christ's sakes, and he's one of my best friends now. I mean, that's mind-boggling. You know, I got to play with the Rush guys just recently at the South Park thing. I got to surprise Matt Stone by bringing Geddy and Alex out. Matt had no idea, playing Closer to the Heart in front of 10,000 people or whatever the hell it was. That's an amazing thing. You know, having a band with Bernie Worrell when he was around was incredible. We're on tour right now. Adrian Blue and Jerry Harrison are supporting us. And Adrian's an old dear friend. And I watched him play last night. And it just reminded me, he's one of the greatest guitarists ever. And he's out there having the time of his life and smiling it up. And these are just wonderful things. I don't know what appeals to them about me. I'm hoping that it's because I'm a fairly nice guy, you know, and I kind of know my way around my instrument, but yeah. I for me, variety is the spice of life. And I love doing these projects when I can. Yeah.
Talk about improvisation. How much of your set varies night by night, and how much of it maybe do you stick, like, you know, maybe on the Pink Floyd Animals section, it seems like that you're sticking a little bit closer to the script, but how much can you improvise?
Well, the Animals thing is full-blown script, you know. As far as on the other Frog Brigade material, we're improvising quite a bit. You know, unfortunately, Skerrick didn't make this run. I don't know if you know who Skerrick is, but Skerrick's our insane sax player. People have called him the Jimi Hendrix of sax, but they're wrong. He's the Adrian Ballou of sax, because he just gets these insane sounds, but he hurt his back and he hasn't been able to be on this trip. So I was a little concerned, but Shiner, Sean Lennon's on guitar, he's stepped up, and actually Harry Waters is unbelievable. It's really been exciting to watch Harry blossom as a soloist, because you know, you never see that. When he plays with his father, he's playing the parts and he's sticking to the script. But I've got him, you know, I've got him out there flashing his pecker around. I mean, I want him to jump out there and go for it. And he's been doing it. And it's really amazing to see, because he's an incredible player. And then Mike Dillon, he never lets me down. That guy's on fire. So it's really... we're doing quite a bit of improv on this. And in the fall, we've decided that we're having so much fun and we want to play more. We decided in the fall we're not going to bring any support, no opening act, because we want to play more material and stretch even further. And hopefully Skerrick will be with us when we do that run.
Yeah, it's a really diverse set. We were looking at the June 3rd set. You start off with King Crimson. You have some Prog Brigade, you have some Claypool Lennon Delirium, Les Claypool and the Holy Mackerel. It looks like kind of a greatest hits of your career. Would that be accurate?
It pretty much is. You know, when there was talk of me doing Frog Brigade again, there was big interest in us going out and doing the Animals thing, because a lot of people, that was 20 some odd years ago, a lot of people didn't get to see it. And there's a lot of people that were children when that came out, young children, so that are at these shows now. So that's been great, but I didn't want to just stick with that era of my career, and hence bringing in Sean and Harry and Mike Dillon and Paulo, because Mike Dillon and Paulo have been throughout various portions of Frog Brigade, Fancy Band, whatever the hell you want to call it, just my solo stuff. So it is a great way for us to be able to dip into other things, you know, bring in some of the Delirium stuff and, you know, doing Tomorrow Never Knows once in a while and whatnot.
How do you go about putting together this set list? I noticed there were a couple of songs like Highball with the Devil that wasn't included. But is it based on maybe the tunings of instruments? How do you kind of put everything together? And are you the one that actually crafts the playlist or the set list?
Yeah, I write the list for pretty much all the bands, except for Oysterhead's kind of a democratic procedure. Well, we played Highball last night, so it just depends.
Oh, you did?
Yeah, it just depends on the evening, you know? And that's part of the reason why we want to do a longer set in the fall, is because after doing Animals, there's really only room for six or seven of my tunes, and we want to play more. So we'll see if people actually want that or not. But they're going to get it, whether they want it or not. We did a show. We didn't have an opener last week or the week before. I can't remember where the hell we were, but we were in between bands. We had Fishbone at the beginning of the tour, which was unbelievable. And then we were in between, and we had to do an evening with. And it was great. And we didn't even take a set break. But the drummers did a whole big percussion thing that was mind-blowing. So that's what's put this notion into my head of let's go out in the fall and just wear everybody down with our material. An abundance.
You mentioned that some people were really young when, you know, the album came out and you were touring years ago, so you come back on the road. When you look out into the crowd or maybe meet fans before or after the show, who's your audience these days? Young, old, Primus fans from way back who've stuck around with you?
It's very diverse. You know, it's funny because there's a contingent of Primus fans that want to come and see this stuff. There's you know, I see Oysterhead t-shirts out there. But there's also there's an element of people that aren't necessarily Primus fans that like the Frog Brigade stuff, like the fancy band stuff, because it's not as aggressive. So, you know, it's not a huge faction, but there are people that I've stumbled across over the years that prefer that. Tends to be women. I don't know. As far as the crowd, it's funny because going back to the notion of how young people were when some of those records came out, I had forgotten, and my son brought it up the other day. He's like, "Oh, you're playing David McAllister. I love that song." Because he didn't grow up on Primus, because Primus was on hiatus when he was first starting to go to shows with us. First Frog Brigade show, he was like 3 years old, running around backstage chasing this hippie guy with a hose, you know, one of the guys that was working backstage. They were, you know, having a squirt gun war with this damn hose. And that's what he remembers. That's what he grew up on. You know, when Primus came along, that was after he had already experienced his dad as the, you know, soloist guy, solo band guy.
Nice.
And even Oysterhead. I remember when we were recording Oysterhead, the kids were pretty little, but they were aware, whereas Primus wasn't even around at that point.
Well, Les, we're running out of time, but before we let you go, I wanted to ask you about your winery in Sonoma County and your wine. Talk about how you got into that.
Well, I used to smoke a lot of the marijuana bush, and it got to the point where I felt like it was adversely affecting my memory, and I didn't want to not remember what my kids were like when they were little. So I decided to stop. So I kind of stopped and I needed advice. And I live in West Sonoma County, and some of the greatest wines in the world Pinots come from our area. So like living in Hollywood, who comes to your barbecues is people in the industry. Well, where I live, who comes to your barbecues is it's Coopers, it's vineyard managers, it's winemakers, the people in the industry, because it's so big where we are. And so we got into these Pinots, and one day me and a couple of friends said, "Oh, you know, we're spending so much money on Pinot, we should make our own wine. It'll be cheaper," which was the stupidest thing I've ever said in my life, because it's fucking outrageously expensive. But it's been a wonderful thing for my wife, because she was super mom. You know, her whole world evolved around the kids, and now the kids have moved out, and the winery is her deal. And it's basically, it's just an excuse for us to have a cool place to hang out. You know, we got this giant 20-foot wiener. We make these gourmet wieners, and you can have wine and wieners. And I hang out there all the time, you know, just because it's a fun spot.
And this is in Sebastopol?
Correct.
Nice.
Yeah. You know, just so our listeners know, it's not that you are just slapping your name on somebody else's product. You started a business and are running this business.
My wife is running the business.
Yeah. A lot of musicians put their name on, you know, from spirits to wine to just about anything. But you started this as a business, what, about 15 years ago?
07 was our first vintage. Mm-hmm. I mean, for me, everything I do is it's for me. Like, these basses we're making, and we're supposed to be selling them. We sell them once in a while. They're insanely expensive, but I'm making them for me, and I usually end up keeping them because I'm not going to sell that one because I want to keep it. But they're made for me because that's, I need this thing to be a certain way for me to deal with it. We make this wine the way we do. We're very fortunate to have this amazing winemaker named Ross Cobb, and that's the only where we have cellar palate. That's what we like to drink. So, you know, even making the wieners, it's like I made these wieners. My kids each developed one. You know, we each have our, you know, we did one for my grandfather, the Papa Simone. But these are things that I personally enjoy, and they just happen to be out there for others. So, even the CPOP thing, I do this soda thing. It was because I had ruptured my inner ear scuba diving years ago, and I like to be on the ocean, but every now and again it kicks my ass and makes me feel sick. So I developed this soda years ago with my son that's good for motion sickness. And so it's all self-serving. Even, you know, the music, I don't put out anything that I don't want to listen to. You know, I don't write music. Whenever I tried to write music, when the record company would go, hey, how about some songs for the radio or whatever, it just sounded like shit, you know. I don't know how to write for other people. I mean, you know, I've done some soundtrack stuff, but even then it's all twisted, it's my shit. Yeah. You know,
Les, thanks so much for joining us today, really appreciate it. Looking forward to seeing the show. It looks like a lot of fun from the videos that I've seen so far. Thanks again for talking with us.
Yeah, it's been incredible. I'm amazed actually how quickly this band has pulled together, and the chemistry that's oozing from its pores.